Live and Lansing, Jack Ebling is on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack and Scott Ebling and you, 1320 WILS. Our next guest, Matthew Casalotto, has been with us a couple of times, Scott. He is best known as the Podium Pro. He's an author and speaker, and we had him on to talk about the standing O, and that is a way to recognize people. It's not just a tribute to Italians. It's a way to give people thanks for a job well done. And he's written a very interesting piece, Is There a Doctor of Ethics in the House? And when we talk about congressional ethics, is it indeed an oxymoron? Hello, Matthew. How are you?
Hey, Jack. Doing fine.
Well, what makes you think that this is an oxymoron? I have a lot of ideas it could be.
Well, it's a question. I'm not sure that I think it's becoming less of an oxymoron. I think they've made some progress.
Okay.
One of the problems is that ultimately the House and the Senate, regardless of what they've done already to improve standards, they'll ultimately be policing themselves and investigating themselves and deciding whether or not to have a trial or press some sort of charges against members. And it's very difficult to put members of Congress in the position of passing judgment on their colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine a police department or any entity policing itself, it's very difficult. What would BP have done in the Gulf, if they had to police themselves? They didn't have some oversight. So it's really difficult for members of the House and the Senate to be put in that position. So I think there is an element of oxymoron in the sense that there's a conflict of interest inherently. I'm not sure they've completely solved that issue with the Independent Office of Congressional Ethics, which, by the way, doesn't include the Senate. It's just the House.
Does your question become more relevant with the recent charges against Congressman Charles Rangel, Representative Maxine Waters?
Well, certainly topical. And I think what's interesting is that with those two cases, I think we need to give credit where it's due in the sense that with the Office of Congressional Ethics, there is at least an independent outside office, obviously still appointed by the Speaker and the Minority Leader, and the budget still comes from them, and the ultimate decision still rests with the House Ethics Committee. And it's complicated, all these moving boxes and everything. But, the fact that they've moved forward with these two cases with an election pending, I think that's a good sign. I like to say sometimes with ethics inquiries, there's an issue called the appearance of impropriety.
Right.
In this case, there might actually be the appearance of propriety, or they're actually doing the right thing, which is kind of nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is, with the Rangel case, for instance, because the Ethics Committee is made up of three Democrats and three Republicans, you can see right away that there's going to be a partisan interest on the side. See, the Democrats would like this to go away.
Sure. So
they'd like to cut some sort of deal.
Absolutely.
The Republicans would like to have Rangel, swinging in the wind for as long as possible. At least to Election Day. So there's a real problem with the partisan self-interest of the two parties. It's still mired in this whole enforcement of ethics. So I'm a little bit encouraged by the fact that they've brought the case. I don't know anything about the cases per se. I don't know if Rangel's, did anything wrong. I don't know for any of the details. But I would say I think it's encouraging that these cases have been brought, even though the Democrats are not really benefiting from bringing these charges.
And you have some firsthand knowledge of how this whole thing works. You were an aide 21 years ago to then House Speaker Jim Wright of Texas?
Yes.
And you were called as a witness in an ethics investigation. You wound up editing his book, Reflections of a Public Man. But what was that like to be a witness and actually be a player instead of an observer?
Well, I'll tell you, the current cases, and every once in a while there's a flurry of activity on ethics, and you hear these cases, and it always brings back sort of bad memories, terrible, painful memories of being in a very uncomfortable position. And one of the reasons I even want to talk about this is that I think it's important for Congress and to restore trust in the public
right.
to make sure that they take into account and reassure potential witnesses. There is no whistleblower protection or witness protection or anything on Capitol Hill. There have to be additional steps taken to reassure witnesses that their testimony, first of all, is expected to be honest. And let's be real clear about it, that if you're called as a witness, and that's my feeling, I was called as a witness, I felt I had a civic duty to give honest testimony.
Right.
But I'm not sure that's always the case, because everyone has conflicting loyalties. I mean, you don't want to say something that's going to hurt your immediate boss, and your future career depends on, you know, there's a lot of really, it's a very awkward and difficult position to be in.
It is called a House of Representatives, not a Hall of Saints. And I think if you talk to a lot of voters or non-voters, they will tell you that part of their frustration is they don't trust anybody here, and they figure that politics is just dirty business, and there are no ethics. Anything goes. It's like maybe a game or a boxing match. Anything you can get away with is fair game.
Well, I think what's interesting, having seen it up close and personal for many years, there are some really, really honorable people who work in Congress, and we don't always hear about them. They sort of go through day to day, and they, you know, they don't make a lot of money when they work there. I'm not saying they make terrible money, but they don't make a lot of money.
What are they making now?
I think it's like 160. I'm not
positive. So roughly four times the average for an American.
Yeah. But a lot less than the members of Congress could make outside.
They certainly could.
They could make more elsewhere. But a lot of senators are millionaires already. I'm not saying we should feel sorry for them. Not at all.
Well, I think what happens with the
long hours and
With the salary that people have talked about, and this is another thing, Matthew, that I think is alarming to people.
Yeah.
They want them to have a salary which is more commensurate to the average American. They feel they'll understand, they'll empathize a little better. And then soon as they are not in office, they can become lobbyists, or they can work in the private sector based on their contacts here. And so they know it's kind of like a deferred payment. They're going to be able to make $500,000 when they get out of office.
Well, they can cash in big time. There's no question about it, and they do. And but a lot of members of Congress, oddly enough, they stay in office for a long time.
Right.
You know, if they were to leave, you know, sooner, like Rangel, if he left earlier, he could maybe make more money. He's 80 years old now, so
right.
I don't know.
He can write a book now. He can make as much as he wants.
But I do think they've made some progress. Of course, this Office of Congressional Ethics doesn't cover the Senate, and the Senate has a number of cases. They just haven't done anything. For many years, they just haven't moved on ethics inquiries. I think people generally have become kind of jaded, and they don't think they don't really have a lot of faith, in the ethics process. They made some strides forward. There's a lot more to do. I'd like to see former members of staff, maybe form an association and help maybe advise on what it's like to be, in my case, a witness, and how do we encourage more truthful testimony? How do we encourage people to come forward and maybe bring information to the attention of the ethics authorities if you see something that's amiss? But there's really not much incentive now to come forward, because I wouldn't have much confidence that what I brought would be held confidential.
We have about a minute and a half left, Matthew. Can you give us three or four things you would recommend, suggest, that would improve the situation?
Well, I think more independence, even more independence. I don't know how you do it with the separation of powers, but to make sure that there's a even greater independence, a subpoena power.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the Office of Congressional Ethics doesn't have subpoena power. You have to include the Senate. And I think you need some kind of whistleblower protection. And in that sense, I think having former members of staff maybe advising and helping with it. The Office of Congressional Ethics includes former members of the House and former staffers. So I think you have to give them some credit for what they're trying to do, but they haven't maybe pursued everything the way they need to. But it's still new. That's a new office. But I'd like to see, I personally would like to see everybody make a promise. Go back to my other project, is make a promise that you're going to give honest testimony, that you're going to live up to the highest standards.
Make a promise and keep a promise. That would be novel for a lot of people.
Make a promise, keep a promise.
Yeah. I think part of the problem here, Matthew, and I don't know what to do about it, is there's just so much money in the system, and people are compromised. They go with good intentions, and quickly they're bought and paid for. And before they know it, because they need money to run, it's the way the system works. And I don't know how you take money out of the system, but as long as it is what it is, I think you're going to have a lot of people compromised.
Well, it's a long conversation about money and politics, and I agree completely. Public financing is one way. People aren't real thrilled about public financing of congressional elections, but to have every member of Congress, you know, required basically to run and get money and spend, you know, almost every race is so expensive. That's the worst thing about it.
They never stop running. The day after election day, they're raising money for the next election.
They keep raising money. And unless we get money out of it, I think public financing certainly ought to be looked at. And it's not something that, you know, a lot of people think is real popular right now. But
right.
I actually personally think, having been removed from it for a while, I think that's probably the best approach is to come up
right.
with some sort of public financing.
Matthew, where can people get access to this piece?
Actually, I'm going to post it on a blog.
Okay.
I haven't published it yet.
All right. Is this thepodiumpro.com?
Yeah, I think that's thepodiumpro.com. I'll put a link there.
All right.
On that, thepodiumpro.com, there'll be a link to this. I have a blog called Electile Dysfunction.
I love that.
That's
Electile
a whole other conversation, Jack.
Well, we've certainly got that. Well, we hope you can get this straight for a lot of people. Matthew, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Jack.
All right.
Take care.
We'll be right back, and we're going to talk with 7th District Congressman Mark Schauer coming up next on Ebling and You.